G-98, ICA headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Only a few weeks after his illuminating and remarkable trip to the alien world of New Kerguelen, Dan McCarthy found himself dealing with a revelation as remarkable as any before it. Leisha, his closest friend among the extraterrestrial messengers whose proven existence had changed life on Earth forever, wore a serious but not severe expression as he delivered the news. The alien's limited facial features certainly impaired his ability to express himself physically. The lack of eyebrows was something Dan could never have imagined would make such a difference, but the words he spoke carried more than enough weight on their own. The fact that Dan could still understand Leisha without a physical, cable-based connection was, in itself, something he would likely have to explain to the public at large fairly soon. But the content of what Leisha had just telepathically communicated was where the real difficulties lay. Part of Dan saw the news as an opportunity, but that part was small.
"Are you sure this gateway you found definitely leads to the architect's world?"
Tara Ford asked Leisha from her position at Dan's side, the only other human present and one of precious few he was happy to share everything with. After a sudden flash that had initially taken both humans by surprise, bringing with it the arrival of Leisha, which was a less surprising follow-up but still an incredible thing to behold, the alien had delivered this urgent news to the two people who simply had to hear it. Like Dan, he trusted Tara absolutely. Responding to Tara, Leisha nodded in the slow and somewhat cumbersome manner he had adopted in imitation of his human friends. "It lies in the sky directly above the architect's outpost," he insisted. The memory of New Kerguelen's second shelter and its disturbing contents had never left Dan's mind in the past few weeks, and Tara had heard enough of the harrowing details to feel just as uncomfortable about Leisha's revelations as Dan was. Leisha's race, the peaceful messengers, had been needlessly confined to a so-called shelter for thousands of years by a race of technologically superior architects who had convinced them that their home planet of New Kerguelen was becoming uninhabitable. From afar, the architects had used radio-like communication devices to deliver instructions to the messengers for so long that Leisha's kind came to see the machines as godlike elders, whose word was unquestioned. Most disturbingly of all, the contents of the second shelter that Dan had recently explored with Leisha revealed that the architect's deceit had been conducted with a very specific and ominous purpose, that of using the messengers as an arm's-length buffer against the potentially dangerous technological development of a third race with whom the architects wished to have no direct dealings. Humanity. The only good things to have been discovered in the shelter were two kinds of small and discreet patch-like devices, both of which were worn on the back of the neck and both of which temporarily granted limited uplift powers. The square patches, which Dan and Tara were currently wearing, enabled effortless telepathic communications between intelligent humanoid species as well as individuals of the same kind. The other variety, physically identical but for their triangular shape, allowed the wearer to interpret the otherwise invisible information-rich transcripts, which had been created by the architects as a way of quickly conveying complex data. The past few weeks had seen Dan's inner circle engage in the early study of these patches with his great friend Timo Fiori, an alien-obsessed billionaire who had sufficient resources and sufficient trust in Dan's mind to perform these tests securely from his company's headquarters in Colorado Springs. Until just a few minutes ago, these ongoing tests had been one of the main things in Dan's mind. Now, however, like so much else, the remarkable patches weren't even an afterthought. The general public had no idea yet about the architects, much less the nature of their deceit, with the only news to have leaked out being that a second shelter had been discovered on New Kerguelen. This structure, known to Dan and the messengers as the Outpost, given that this was how the architect's transcripts had described it, was first spotted by a human crew sent to assist in the repair of the great shelter to which Leisha's entire race had been cruelly and unnecessarily confined for so long. The initial revelation that the world outside the shelter was safe had raised eyebrows on Earth, but Dan knew that the additional details regarding the outpost and its creators would be on a whole different level of explosiveness when they became known. That a superintelligent and technologically advanced third race was out there was big enough news in its own right. This news was added to even more, though, by the recent discovery in Turkey of ancient carvings depicting a meeting between humans and beings whose anatomies perfectly fit the physical dimensions suggested by the equipment Dan had found in the architect's abandoned outpost on New Kerguelen. That those superintelligent beings could potentially be reached by radio communications had been a similarly remarkable piece of news, given that it opened so many doors to potential contact. It was now proven, beyond doubt, that the messenger's ability of near-instantaneous interplanetary travel was not in reality their ability at all, but had rather been granted to them by the architects. Like so much else. Every uplift power had been passed down from the architects, from the telepathy and telekinesis and even the flash-based teleportation that had wowed humanity when first utilized on Earth, all the way to the transcript reading power that was as yet unknown by anyone outside of Dan's inner circle. The messengers had been used, led down a very narrow developmental path, not in the image of the architects, but to fit an image the architects saw as desirable. Perhaps most troublingly, this deceit was conducted in accordance with the architects' wish to maintain a guard dog-like buffer against a human race they had pinpointed as dangerously intelligent and expansionist during their only known visit to Earth many thousands of years in the past. Dan McCarthy, whose life had been driven by an unquenchable thirst for truth of all kinds, naturally wanted to know more. Despite recognizing the potential Pandora's box-like risk inherent in the project, Dan had recently been hugely intrigued by the prospect of working with Timo Fiori to reverse-engineer the messenger's seemingly broken radio-like machines in an effort to build humanity's own means of contacting the distant and all-powerful race. But in the few minutes since Leisha had arrived in Buenos Aires, just hours before the long-scheduled official opening of the Interspace Contact Agency, which would act as humanity's sole point of diplomatic contact with extraterrestrial beings, everything had changed. Now, as Leisha succinctly put it, humanity wouldn't need a radio to reach the architects, because the messengers had just found their front door. The whole purpose of the newly established ICA was to enable a meaningful exchange of information between Earth and New Kerguelen, free of the suffocating bureaucracy and politicking that had blighted all previous attempts. It had finally become more or less universally accepted that Earth could benefit in innumerable ways from deeper cooperation with the messengers, whose technologies could very feasibly assist in decisively dealing with issues ranging from truly sustainable energy usage to disease-free longevity. But with just a few hours remaining before the agency finally got up and running, the rug had just been pulled from under Dan McCarthy's feet. He struggled to believe that anyone else would accept the prospect of recklessly bursting through a scantly understood doorway in the sky between New Kerguelen and the architect's unknown home world, and even he saw the sense in such hesitation. Attempting to establish radio contact would have been one thing, since the architects clearly knew all about humanity anyway, but bursting through their front door uninvited seemed decidedly unwise. On an even deeper level, Dan felt an undeniable fear originating from the fact that he knew what kind of devious deceit the architects were capable of. After what they had done to Leisha's overly trusting race, he wouldn't put anything past them. Deceit came neither naturally nor easily to Dan McCarthy, and the periods of his life when it had been truly necessary to keep certain things from the public for the greater good were, without doubt, the toughest he had endured. He truly hoped there would be a way out of this fresh predicament which didn't involve outright lying to the world when he stood before the media's cameras in a matter of hours, but even a lie by omission was a troubling prospect when the information was this explosive. Dan's stomach began to turn as it dawned on him just how little time he had to process everything, what with the ICA opening coming so soon. Immediately after the public event, he had intended to conduct a meeting with his deputy planetary liaisons to loop them in on everything he had seen inside New Kerguelen's mysterious outpost. Things were far too tense between Chairman Godfrey and the other deputies for Dan to share everything prior to the public speeches, but he now shuddered to think how U.S. President Valerie Slater and Chinese Premier Ding Ziyang would react to this latest news. The architects' deceitfulness and their explicitly stated distrust of humanity were always likely to have raised potentially reactive alarm bells among leaders whose ears were never far from the mouths of militaristic warhawks. The opportunity to preemptively engage the architects by surprise, as patently ridiculous as this was to Dan, was something he knew would be raised as a possibility by some hammer-wielding strategists who saw every problem as a nail. On the contrary, he also fully expected that many would seek to destroy the doorway before the architects could traverse it once more. New Kerguelen was apparently the intermediary between Earth and the architects' unknown world, with its upper atmosphere housing a portal-like gateway to each, and this gave birth to concerns in Dan's mind that conservative reactions would also include suggestions to destroy the sole means of linking Earth and New Kerguelen. As Dan thought more deeply on this point, he anticipated arguments that the messengers could offer nothing to humanity in any event, given that their supposed wisdom all originated from the radio-controlled elders they had seen as gods. With the architects now radio silent, and also now understood to be untrustworthy manipulators, anything and everything they had ever fed to the messengers would be considered suspect. Of all the possibilities that would be suggested as the best course of action once he revealed the truth, Dan hated the idea of losing contact with the messengers most of all. More broadly, he considered any attempts to destroy one or both gateways to be utterly pointless, since the architects, if they were even still around, could presumably create another just as easily as they had created the first. Sadly, however, such two-step logic was something he had long since ceased to count on when dealing with national governments. In the years since Dan McCarthy had found himself propelled to media prominence by his discovery of a government cover-up of evidence that aliens had visited Earth, he had gotten somewhat used to dealing with high-pressure situations that would have once suffocated him. He attempted to draw on every ounce of that previous experience now, as Leisha stared at him with eyes so weary, they seemed to indicate that the alien was desperately awaiting Dan's wisdom. It was easy to forget that however tough things were for Dan, he wasn't the one whose entire species had been duped for thousands of years by the architects in question. Leisha, who had very recently and very decisively saved the life of Dan's brother Clark when a would-be assassin confronted the pair right outside the building where Dan now stood, was a good and well-meaning individual. It had hurt Dan to learn how completely Leisha had been misled, but it warmed his heart that he had today gone to the effort of delivering this news just in time for Dan to consider it before the ICA's grand opening and his private meeting with the world's most powerful leaders. "We should talk to Emma," Dan said, turning towards his sister-in-law, Tara. Emma McCarthy, the common familial link between them, was a PR guru globally recognized as the expert among experts when it came to handling explosive information. She had already returned to the field in recent weeks in an effort to make the ICA's opening as smooth as possible by taking steps to improve its early public image, and there was no one else Dan would even consider taking the news to first.
"Absolutely," Tara said. "How long do we have?"
As Dan glanced at his watch, a woefully timed knock on the door of his corner office immediately captured everyone's attention. Leisha, thinking fast, pointed towards the door and used his uplift power of telekinesis to lock it. When the doorknob jiggled a few seconds later, Dan thanked his lucky stars that the alien had been so alert.
"It's only me," ICA Chairman William Godfrey announced via an intercom on the other side of the door. "You are still in there, aren't you?"
"I'll go,"
Leisha said, his telepathically delivered words somehow coming to Dan and Tara in the form of a whisper rather than at the regular mental volume.
"Remember to take your patches off before he sees them, and any time you want to talk, just put them back on and call me. Be careful and stay true."
In a single and incredible action, Leisha pointed to the door to unlock the knob and created a momentarily disorienting flash that lasted barely a millisecond. It faded just as quickly, revealing a room that now contained two individuals rather than three. Dan and Tara both looked towards the door, anticipating Godfrey's entrance and wondering if he would have seen the flash. He would know exactly what it meant if he had. He was very familiar with this method of short-distance alien travel,
and that would bring uncomfortable questions as to why Leisha had shown up in Buenos Aires and chosen to disappear as soon as Godfrey arrived at Dan's door. Dan's phone buzzed briefly in his pocket as the door opened, announcing the arrival of a text message he understandably opted to ignore for now.
"How's everything going?" the imposing English politician asked as he stepped into Dan's office. "We should really get that doorknob looked at."
Dan forced a laugh, attempting to gulp away his discomfort.
"I guess so," he said. "But we do have some bigger things to think about today."